Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ramblecast. I am your host, Chris Cesarano, and joining me are Jerry.
Greetings.
And Wesley.
Hello, hello.
I should just get like a voice clip of freaking Captain Picard saying Wesley all the time.
Shut up, Wesley.
I'll edit it. Shut up, Wesley.
Believe it or not, you're not the first person to make that joke.
Oh, I know I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm never going to be. You're going to be 80 years old. Someone's going to be making that joke.
Probably.
God help us all.
But, okay, let's get on proper track. This week we have a special episode in mind. I actually wanted to do something interesting for Valentine's Day, which is at the end of this week, but, you know, whatever. But generally, I wanted to get an episode out that discussed something that I've actually thought about before. I've thought about in the past, which is romance in video games, and honestly, how games kind of suck at it. And that's the funny thing, is there's a wide variety of ways that video games have tried to implement romance. And of course, the one that came up to mind when we were discussing the idea in email and everything, everyone, of course, brought up Dragon Age. I brought up BioWare games in general. Wesley, you and Erica brought up Dragon Age Inquisition because you've been playing it recently.
Like, yes.
I mean, if you play a BioWare game, you've dealt with, you know, their romance options. And for the most part, people really like them. So people really like romance in the BioWare games. And I feel like they could be better. But first, let's go with, how do you guys normally feel when it comes to, when you first played a BioWare game and you first realized you could romance a character, like, was it weird to you or was it, like, interesting? Like, did you find you enjoyed going that direction or were you hesitant at first? Because, like, oh, man, this is a video game. That could be creepy.
So, I remember playing Mass Effect for the first time. That came out in, like, 2007 or something. It was a while ago.
Was a good summer. That was a good
year. I remember it. I remember it being very interesting. Like, I wasn't sure exactly what was happening as the game was going on. And the interesting thing about the BioWare games is how much their romancing options and mechanics have evolved over the course of the six games or whatever. Because I guess I remember doing it in. There's some romance options in Knights of the Old Republic, even, which is even farther back in time. But I just remember being amazed, like. Part of me, like, because I was, like, 17 at the time, so I was like, oh, yeah, I'm totally going to have sex with the blue alien chick. but, which sounds horrible, but I don't know, I really like it. I think it attaches you to the characters, to the other characters in the game, like, on such a different level, because, you know, you're really trying to, you know, you're romancing them, like, even if it's sort of simple mechanics and, you know, you're giving them gifts and you're just picking the option of the conversation that they like, it still invests you in the game a little more in a really interesting way that not a ton of games do.
Yeah, I get, funny enough, actually Dragon Age Origins is on my pile this year. I've kept not having time to get into the Dragon Age series, but I played through all the Mass Effects and I think I played BioWare stuff back, like I played the original Baldur's Gate games and things like that, which had a lot of party interactions. I don't think they had any romance specifically, but yeah, I remember the romance stuff in Mass Effect, which when, to your question, Chris, when they sort of announced that that was going to be an option in it, I was kind of like, huh, I wonder what that's going to involve. And I purposely sort of kept myself in the dark on what happened with those romance things until I actually got to the point in the game where I could do it, and because I wanted to see how it was handled. And yeah, it's the real problem I have, I can't speak to Dragon Age, but the real problem I have with the Mass Effect stuff, kind of like Wesley said, is that it's just not the way romance works in any kind of real-world context. That's really my problem. I mean, sure, yeah, Mass Effect's a sci-fi thing and whatever, but, I mean, it's still, you know, you're still interacting with people and trying to romance people. And really what it came down to was going up to the various potential love interests, saying the right things to them, listening to the particular backstories that you needed to listen to. And those for some of them were actually pretty interesting. I found that to be the most engaging part, was listening to them sort of talk about their histories and things like that. But, yeah, it really just came down to say the right things at the right times in the game to the person you want to romance, and you succeed or fail, and that's kind of it. And I'm like, yeah, no relationship I've ever had has worked that way. That's really my problem. I don't know if Dragon Age gets a little more, you know, nuanced with it or whatnot, but,
so
yeah.
To speak to that, I think if we're going to stick straight on BioWare here for a second, one of the things that BioWare has done that, like, it has the RPG problem with any mechanic, right? And that people consider it a puzzle. They write facts on it. They solve it. Like, you know, there's a specific route you go to romance Liara in Mass Effect 3 or whatever. And so it takes all of the, like, dynamicness out of it, really. And, like, BioWare is almost fostering that in their latest games, where, like, they instantly pop up whether or not somebody approves or disapproves in Dragon Age Inquisition. Like, as soon as you make a choice, you instantly know how every person in your party feels about it. And if one of them is your love interest, you're like, oh, well, crap, Cassandra hated that decision. I'm an idiot. Well, should Origins, I go back and reload that save?
Origins kind of did that too. Origins does that, at least with the people that are currently in your active adventuring party.
Yeah. This one goes further. Like, it goes all of your companions, I guess, is the word they use.
Oh.
Even the ones that are back at base.
Well, that can there you go. Sorry, I'm just thinking in regards to the mechanics, because I haven't played Inquisition yet. I don't have a proper system for it. And I didn't have the money for it either. So, I haven't had a chance to play it, and yeah, that sounds like it actually would make things a bit more difficult, but that's actually at the same time, I mean, that's actually the funny thing. It does seem like a very sort of juvenile way of, it's that idea where it's like, oh my god, you love all the same things that I do. Let's totally bang each other. And it's
I think that's actually part of the problem, is that what they've done is since they've wrapped like achievements or trophies around completing a romance side quest, like the entire objective to sit down when you're playing a BioWare game, it's like, okay, who am I going to bang? Okay, what do I got to do to make that happen? Like, that's the sort of mindset you go in with, because you have to kind of make your choice early
and then aim for that and strategize it.
Yeah, yes. You got to aim early. And then you also have to, and that's part of the thing, too, is it's as bad as most rom-coms in that the end goal of everything, like, is, okay, you banged. Success, achievement unlocked. That's everything you work
towards. Romance successful.
Romance successful, like, exactly.
Well, okay. And that's the other thing, right? The sort of implication that they make, at least in Mass Effect, is like, yeah, getting into bed with them is kind of the end goal. But once you've completed that, the way it always felt to me like they treated it was that doing that was just visualization of, okay, you know, you now have a proper relationship with this person. It wasn't just, you know, your goal is to have a one night stand with them and then call it a day. But the problem was, is that you got to that point and then nothing really happened after that. Like, you could still go up and talk to them and whatever, but there was no, after you did that, there was no more, that was the end of the storyline. There was nothing more of the relationship to develop or see. And that's kind of what I didn't like about it, is that, you know, it's a video game, and I can understand, you know, maybe taking a simplistic path to getting to the point of romancing someone. But it would have been nice if maybe, like, what I would have liked to have done in Mass Effect is have that opportunity earlier on in the game, and then have the sort of relationship you have with this person progress, you know, go further along throughout the rest of the story, so that you're actually maybe having more stages of the relationship throughout the whole game. Because in Mass Effect, you get to the point where you have sex with somebody, and then that's just that's very close to the end of the game in general.
And then that's all focused on defeating the big bad.
It's like, you succeeded, good for you, and moving on.
Yeah, it's like, okay, now we all focus on the big bad, and, you know, and it's like, you know, you've seen that movie before, too, where the beginning of Act 3, you know, the hero and the heroine just lay side by side, do the hippity-dippity, and then they exchange knowing glances occasionally or smiles or whatever during the final concluding sequence. And then finally they get together for the big kiss at the end of the movie, you know.
And or when, one of them dies.
And or one of them dies, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's even more sad in a BioWare sense, because they had such an opportunity, like especially with Mass Effect, where they had three games, where they really could have fostered that relationship over the course of three games. Exactly. Which, you know, they do in some regards. I mean, there is very dialogue badly. Referencing it.
Very badly. I mean, because...
Very badly, and not enough, but... they had the opportunity there to make that something really cool, and it just didn't happen.
Well, I think – I feel like it was a bit weird too, because in the first game I romanced Liara, because otherwise it was Ashley. And
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, in Mass Effect 1, that's who I was originally aiming for, and then I messed something up at some point, and I ended up getting with Liara instead, and I was like, okay, that was probably, and I think that
you
was
weren't racist enough. One. You weren't yeah, racist exactly. enough for Ashley. I mean, yeah, that's you, what it comes yeah, down
exactly.
to.
Didn't have enough space racism.
Exactly. So yeah. you have, and that's the thing. In the second game, I actually, and this is probably going to just make so many people like question me in some ways too, because I go from like hating Ashley to I actually gun for Miranda in the second one, like. By choice, because I don't know. I like.
So did I, actually, I think, yeah.
And that was the weird thing, because in Mass Effect 3, I ended up being able to have my Shepard get, you know, have another little quick tryst with Miranda, because to me it's like, okay, that's the ongoing relationship for my Shepard. But then at the very end, they kind of had this thing happen between Shepard and Liara, and it felt like, oh, this was the romance for your, like, all along or something. Like, it felt like they were, like, that was the true romance for my Shepard. And it's like, no. No, she's just an ex-girlfriend, man. So it felt kind of weird.
It's in the past.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, in Mass Effect 2, I romanced Tali, which I actually think was really interesting. Like, it was an interesting set of conversations there because of the whole, you know, bio suit, you know, may get deadly infection if she touches the air.
Yeah, she had to take like extra antibiotics, if I recall, for that.
Yeah. It was a reasonably interesting storyline. But then I just remember, like, in Mass Effect 3, like, there's a scene where, like, you walk in on her and Garrus having a relationship. And I was like,
yep. I love that.
I feel so betrayed right now. I feel so betrayed.
See, I felt so happy. Yeah. But you know what? You know what? You know what? You actually reminded me. You reminded me the reason why I did not gun for Tali. Because that's the thing. Of all the female characters, naturally, I love Tali the most. Because Tali is just... She's Tali, man. How can you not favor her?
But exactly.
The reason I didn't go for her was because, I don't know, something about the fact that she needed to wear that suit. And I'm like... I'm going to kill her somehow. Like, I can't have that responsibility hanging over my head. I can't do that. I love her too much. I must bang Miranda instead.
Oh, man. Oh, my.
So it's for her own good. I mean, come on.
One thing we haven't discussed with the BioWare games is the plethora of, like, homosexual options that they always allow.
I was going to get into that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I think it's very cool that they offer those, but they're handled pretty much just as badly as the other ones. At least they're, you know,
yeah. I'd say a little
equal
bit worse
in that sense.
I'd say a little bit worse, because this is actually one of the things that I really thought about, and I was going to save it more towards the end, but I guess I could go for the beginning of the beginning ish. But no, I actually, which was the first one to offer the gay option?
I believe it was 2, wasn't it?
And Dragon Age Origins had they basically had the bisexual characters for each gender. Like, Liliana was bisexual, and then the elf dude was bisexual.
I think there was one in the first.
Was there?
Oh, maybe. I may be remembering wrong.
Because who were the male options? The male options were Kaiden and who?
Maybe Ashley?
Maybe Ashley was bi? No, Liara was the one that was bi.
Yeah, I think that's a trait of that race. I don't remember what
the name it is. Because that was the big thing, is you could have a girl-on-girl sequence.
Yeah.
I don't know... I don't know if you could have a guy-on-guy sequence in the first one.
Yeah, you couldn't... Yeah, I think Kaiden was the first one, but it's been a number of years, so I may be wrong about that.
No, no, because he was the dude in the first one. He wasn't a character in the second one. Not a playable one, at least.
Right, yeah.
Unless... No, Garrus wasn't a romance option in the first one, I don't think, because fangirls complained about that.
Yeah, that's right. I think so. I really need to play Mass Effect again one of these days. Or that series.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, that's the thing. Like, the even then, like, by the second one or the third one, and even again in the Dragon Age games, if you are, you know, homosexual, then you're kind of limited to just one character. And what if that character isn't the kind of personality you'd regularly go for? Like, what if you're a gay man that would prefer dating Alistair over the elf guy in Dragon Age? Because the elf guy in Dragon Age, I mean, he's basically kind of a male whore. I mean, he's just... Everything somehow comes back to doing the dirty.
Yeah, I think, yeah, kind of. I remember hearing, this is kind of all I know about Dragon Age, is I've heard, you know, I've heard people have discussions about the characters and such in that game, but I've never seen them myself, so it's kind of interesting to try to figure out. Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing with, that's the thing, is I applaud BioWare for trying to tackle romance in games. It just felt like, and, you know, there were limitations to how those games were probably had to be structured and written and whatnot based on how they progressed. But I don't know. It felt like it was one of those things that never felt like it evolved very much. Like, they gave you more options for it, but they never really, at least within Mass Effect, they never really evolved the formula on how it worked and try and improve that at all, which was kind of unfortunate.
Yeah. It's sort of the same in Dragon Age in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, 4 is, well, in some ways, as it feels in in comparison to other games, it kind of feels fleshed out in, you know, the BioWare games, but really, as we've discussed, I mean, it's not. It's very video gamey. It's very, you have a win condition. And all it's about is making sure the other person likes what you have to say, which is very, very different from, actually, very different from what it's like to actually get to know someone. Because some people, it's great because they challenge you. They bring up things you've never considered before, and they're, you know, they spark your mind, kind of a thing. Versus, you know, oh, hey, we just happen to like the same stuff. That's why I actually find it funny, because, well, firstly, I always hated Morrigan in Dragon Age. I never understood how so many people romanced her by choice.
Wrong with you?
I hate her. She's such a bitch. Oh. But that's the thing. Like, technically, though, she would be the kind of character that technically would be interested in someone that would challenge her. You know? I mean, instead of just someone that capitulates to her every idea of this world is terrible, everyone's an idiot. And I'm going to, like, I don't know, her fucking ambition. I hate her. But instead of capitulating to all of her, you know, neuroses or anything, someone that could actually challenge her and say, well, here's where your philosophy is flawed, kind of a thing. Like, technically, for someone that prides themselves on intelligence, that would be the kind of, like, character you could play as. But instead, anytime you try and counter her argument, it's almost like the writers themselves could relate to Morrigan in such a way that the player character ends up being a straw man for her rants. Like, any point you bring up is just easily knocked down or something like that. I mean, or at least that's always the feeling that I got. I mean, maybe it's because my philosophy is so very different from hers as a character. But then again, you know, I went right for Liliana, so what does that say about me versus what it says about anyone that went for Morrigan? But no, I actually did want to jump back, though, because I said, like, discussing the BioWare stuff, discussing some of the different things, I did actually start thinking, and it's one of the reasons I was looking forward to this episode, I did start thinking about the fact that in Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3 and even some of the Dragon Age games, if you are a homosexual player, then you're kind of limited in options. And I thought about that in regards to what it might mean for real life. And then, to me, I actually thought, you know what would be interesting is a video game designed around a sort of dating game, but not a traditional dating, like not a dating sim, but for homosexual people where it's just, oh, here's your list of, you know, yaoi boys or whatever, like just boys you could bang or something like that. But like having to go through the difficulty that, you know what, here's a smattering of guys. A lot of them are heterosexual and they might be ideal for you, but they're never going to be interested in. How do you deal with that? And, you know, what's your etiquette? How do you deal with, you know, having feelings for someone that can never return them, kind of a thing? And then going and having to try and find something in a smaller population set. Like, basically, you know, you encounter fewer people that are homosexual and therefore, or even bisexual when you think about it. I mean, I know far more bisexual women than I know bisexual men. So it's like having to deal with that, you know, kind of limited options in regards to romance and how you deal with that. And I feel like that could actually be a much more interesting and honestly a much more progressive game compared to, I look at someone going home and it's like, you know, it's got that twist, but it's like, what is it really saying other than, oh yeah, life is hard, but do you really get the feeling of that? Do you get the experience? Do you get the understanding? And I feel like a game where you're kind of forced to be in that position, I mean, look at the rage people had over Depression Quest. I mean, people love that game because it kind of gives you the feeling of what it means to face that level of depression. So to me, doing something similar, but to sound pedestrian, more of a quote unquote video game, instead of just, you know, HTML text adventure, like I feel like that would be interesting, you know, having these characters that you could really get into, because I feel like you need that level of writing. You need that level of being able to relate to the world, to relate to the characters, to truly grasp. So you could, you know, even if you don't think of yourself as the male gay player character, then you I'm going to be honest, I choose male specifically because maybe I'm wrong in this, I don't know, but I just feel like everyone's so much more open to girl on girl. And whether, and as I said, like I went through college and I knew so many bisexual women versus bisexual men. And so I feel like, you know, maybe there's a difference in balance there. So, yeah, like playing as a homosexual male in that situation, in that scenario, like even if you're just thinking of them as like, okay, this is like, even if the characters, let's say they're it's a third person game. So that way, you know, you don't have people freaking out. It's a third person game with a predefined protagonist that you're trying to find the perfect match for. In fact, that might actually work a little bit better because now you have to find a good match for this personality. And here are all these heterosexual options that would be great. Except they're heterosexual. Like, to me, that sounds like a game that would have some level of potential, some level of what you, like of education, I guess, social education or something like that. I mean, to me, that sounds like something that falls more in line with what I think progressive should mean in a social and political manner, because you're not just, you're not putting something in there because, okay, we need to represent this group. You're putting something in there so that people can understand what it's like to be different than what you are, kind of a thing. And that's what video games are partially for, right? We try and go into these worlds. We try and get what it's like to feel like, you know, even if it's like Hollywood eyes, like you play a military game because you want something to feel different than the space sci-fi game. You want to pick up the machine gun and be like, what does it feel like to have the odds against me where only a handful of bullets could kill me? Which, you know, I mean, it's still laughing in the face of reality, but it's a different sort of experience and it's a different sort of feeling that puts you in a different mindset. puts you in a different mentality.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, really, I think what it comes down to, I think the main problem that video games have when it comes to tackling something like romance or sexuality or whatever, really, is the same problem that they tend to have, which with properly encapsulating a lot of different subject matter, which is just that video games are still, and there's been a lot of discussion about this the last while, is video games in general just still aren't very well written, without, you know, with a few exceptions. And a lot of titles, even ones that I think are not necessarily, like, you could chalk up a lot of what goes on in the Mass Effect games and sort of how ham-fistedly that handles romance down to the way they were trying to design the game, maybe to have mass appeal or something like that. They wanted to make it a little bit of a, they wanted to streamline it and make it simpler. But I think even in a lot, even with a lot of other types of games, it's just that I don't know, either people don't know how to write that stuff in a compelling way, or there just hasn't been a game that's really decided to try to do that and marry it to an interesting game at the same time yet. I mean, there's some examples in the past. I mean, one of what is actually my favorite game of all time is which a lot of people haven't played, is actually a point-and-click adventure game from around the turn of the millennium called The Longest Journey. And that game actually has a lot of adult themes in it. It takes place in a sort of partial dystopian future, but it has a lot of human characters who, the best way to describe it is talk like real people. And this is a game that talks about, that has like homosexual characters who very openly talk about their, like, their sex lives and their relationship in a real way. Like, it's a game that has a lot of adult language in it and things like that, but not in the, you know, used for shock value kind of way or anything like that. It's presented like as, you know, a way people actually talk. They don't throw in the fact that, they don't throw in someone talking about their lesbian sex life just to go, look how edgy we are. You know, it's in there with purpose. And, I think it handles that incredibly well. And it's funny that that's one of only a handful of games, if I really sat down and thought about it, that I think could tackle the, or did tackle that kind of thing really well, but it sort of set out to, that was kind of its intention. And I think it's absolutely possible to do really deep, meaningful sort of emotional romance stuff in games. I just think very few have managed to pull it off yet. And that's probably because the medium is still so new and people are kind of still figuring this out.
Yeah. And I also think it's also a difference in expectations. I don't think, I mean, I've discussed with people before, I don't think the Western gaming industry and mentality is understanding or trained or prepared to view games as being a way to deliver a story. And even if they do, like, it's a very specific sort of, like, Dragon Age kind of an idea where, or, like, I mean, because you have, like, all these PC games like Planescape Torment, which people view very, very fondly and everything, but for me, like, I grew up with Final Fantasy instead. I grew up with that instead of Fallout or Planescape. And so to me, it's like you can have a completely linear game with a really good story instead of a game that, you know, you're literally making your own choices every which way. Because even though games where you make your own choices can be nice, at the same time, I feel like they're a bit limited in what kind of stories they can tell, because they rely on player response and there's only so much you can do with that, realistically speaking, at least. Especially now that budgets are getting bigger, you need voice acting, you need all this character modeling, you need motion capture. And so you can't just have infinite text options. Or personally, I mean, were it me, Dragon Age would still have the silent protagonist whose options you choose, because I was fine with that in Origins, but no, we need voice acting.
Yeah, I think it's partly just the type of games that the Western audience gravitates towards. You know, you're not going to see, especially these days when things are moving more online and more multiplayer sort of focused, I think you are pulling further away from games that really foster, hold on, that really foster that kind of story and character development in a lot of ways. I mean, we are sitting here talking the praises of BioWare when, you know, there's some text trees there, and while there is like personal connection with the people, like it's nothing compared to what you'll see out of, you know, Asian games.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things I was going to lead into, because, I mean, I will say BioWare is a step further than Harvest Moon, because that was my first exposure to dating sims, and I'll tell you what, in real life, a flower does not grow in the same spot every day that you can take to your honey and she'll be delighted to see it. Because that's how Harvest Moon worked, man, and all of its typo glory, typo-filled glory. But that's the thing, that was technically my first exposure. So when I started playing the BioWare games, I actually wasn't very, you know, surprised or uncomfortable or anything at all when they had the dating sim elements. I just actually started to look at it like, oh, here's how this could be improved. But actually, one of the things I did want to bring up, though, in comparison was Alpha Protocol, because even though Dragon Age 2 tried to get more towards the response instead of good, bad, neutral, more of a emotional response, it still felt like it was kind of tied to the good, bad, neutral versus Alpha Protocol, where it's basically professional, smart ass. Like I forget the specific names. One's aggressive, and then there's like a fourth option, I believe. Those three basic differences, though, and then I think a fourth. And different characters, you'd use different ones more often, but sometimes, like let me think. Like the one woman who's like a reporter or something. It's bad if you're always a flirt, and it's bad if you're always professional. But if you know when to use either option, then you'll be able to romance her. It all depends on what her responses are at that moment, what she's saying, what her intentions are, what her motivations are at that moment. And I actually really liked that. They executed that very well because it showed that this is a multidimensional character. Versus the Russian woman, you kind of always had to be aggressive because she was turned on by that kind of a thing. She was a very special character. But that's the thing, like Alpha Protocol actually did a pretty good job in regards to the how do you respond to someone's personality versus how do you just say what? Well, and granted, though, I mean, it was still video gamey, like. I tried to play, I mean, I ended up doing whatever I wanted to get, like, as many positive reactions as I could, because you got more dossiers, you got more this, you got more that, achievements to unlock and everything. So, naturally, I tried to get all that stuff, and I tried to play the field, so my character was kind of, you know, multi-personalityed. But I still like the fact that it's more about the personality and how you interact with that. How you interact with that character. And even then, like, even if you do have those different sides, I mean, there are some people that I joke and talk with that completely differently than I do other people. So there are multiple sides to one person's personality. So there you go. So.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Did either one of you guys get to play Alpha Protocol?
I didn't. I've had that sitting on my Steam for, God, like two computers now. I've been meaning to, I keep meaning to get to that. And I've heard it is a game that is extremely flawed, but is pretty incredible in spite of that. And
honestly, it's one of those games that makes me think Obsidian could be better than BioWare.
I could totally believe that, yeah.
They need more money to be better than BioWare.
Yeah. Yeah. If they had BioWare money, then yeah, maybe they could pull it off. But that's what I've been told about that game is that, well, because Obsidian games always kind of fall down technically, but they're always, like, most people generally consider Fallout New Vegas to be much better than Fallout 3 in terms of story and writing, and that's where Obsidian tends to really shine, and that's what I similarly heard is the best part of Alpha Protocol as well. Playing it, not so much, but...
Well, that's going to depend, honestly, on your weapon proficiencies and stuff, because I liked the gameplay a lot, too.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a lot more fun to play than Mass Effect 1 and 2. It's been long enough I couldn't really compare it to 3 specifically, but I did enjoy it because I played it like right between Mass Effect 1 and 2, right. And I liked it more than both of those in regards to gameplay, and I really liked the story. I would have loved to see a sequel. Sega didn't want to fund another one, so...
Nope. Yeah, and I think kind of one of the things you were touching on with Alpha Protocol, and this is the same problem that Mass Effect and I presume Dragon Age have as well, is that, and I think could go a long way to improving the way romance in those games and games in general work, is that it and I honestly don't know how you do this. It would probably require so much writing and voice acting as to be, you know, untenable with the way game budgets are these days. But what I would really love is to be able, when you're, to not only have more of an opportunity to build a relationship with someone over a longer period of time, i.e. not over 4 or 5 conversations like you do in Mass Effect, but also to have the option, like you said, to be able to do, to have more subtlety and nuance than just, you know, the paragon, the renegade, and the noncommittal answers to everything, you know, to basically just have 3 different attitudes you can do. If you could take it so that you could say a number of different things that would influence things in a, you know, more nudge the conversation rather than ram it down a particular path, and be able to sort of build a rapport with someone that could change dramatically, like to be able to say, that there isn't just one way that you can romance someone, that you could successfully romance them by approaching it in a number of different ways, and the relationship with that character would progress differently depending on those subtle choices. I think that would be pretty amazing as well, but I mean, that would require a substantial amount of work. But I think if they wanted to make romance in any kind of game that just doesn't seem sort of forced and cliche, I think that's the depth they would have to go with it. Because the thing that one of the problems that I have sort of with something like Gone Home as a game in general is that I think people really like that game because it did tell a sort of deep, emotional, fleshed out romantic story, which I will give it credit for. It did do that. The problem with that is that it wasn't a romance that you cultivated or created or, you know, influenced in your own way. It was just a story being told to you. It was a romance that was already plotted out and happened. If you got to the end of the game, that romance happened the same way for everybody. There was no way for you to change the outcome. And I don't think that's a good way to handle it either. I think if you could make a game where you could have a romance with that level of depth, but you can actually control and influence how it progresses and change the outcome yourself, I think that's what's going to make it. That's the sort of next level thing I think people really wanted to see out of something like the BioWare games.
To me, a linear story has its place alongside a more free, open, make your own choices kind of story. So,
yeah.
But I mean, I will say though, like, I mean, I agree. I would actually love to see a game where, and you know what, even if you don't have a choice in who becomes your romantic partner, I like the idea of a game where that relationship is a part of it, and perhaps the relationship is great and flourishes throughout the game because of some of your choices and what you do. Perhaps, you know, the relationship doesn't work out and it has to end. And then perhaps you even make mistakes. Like, let's say you have the option of cheating on the partner. Like,
yeah.
What are all the different things that could happen in this game? And I feel like if you do that, there needs to be an understanding that it's not about a victory condition. Like, this is the bad ending, this is the good ending, this is that, this is the other thing. Catherine kind of fell into that, the Japanese game Catherine, because it has different levels of quality endings, and some of them are tied to your morality, but for the most part, actually, that's a game that I'm surprised I didn't bring up in the email. But for the most part, I mean, that's a game where it kind of had that. It kind of had, this is the good ending because this is the, I guess, socially acceptable ending. And sometimes, you know, it's better for both parties if the relationship ends. I mean, two people might be destructive to each other. So it's better if they separate, and even if they've become codependent.
That's the kind of depth that I'd really like to see, is stuff like games that not only have, you know, deep relationships that you can influence in a sort of micro level, but that have the reality of real relationships, which is that, you know, it's not all rosy. Even really good relationships are often a lot of work and have a lot of strife in them. And sometimes, like you said, at the end of the day, sometimes the best thing for for some people is to have a relationship end, which is not something I've ever really seen approached in a game narrative that way.
And that's the thing. Like, I know there's a bunch of indie games out there that do touch on this stuff a little bit, but that's the thing. They're usually small, experimental, or then there's going to be stuff like, I know a lot of people sing the praises of To the Moon, I think it is. And I believe someone gifted me that on Steam, so I got to play it at some point. But
I have to play that too.
You have a lot of indie games, but to me, like, there's something nice about indie stuff, but I think even our indie games aren't necessarily at where you might find some of the most influential independent film, even, in some ways. Yeah. And I know that probably sounds like, oh, Citizen Kane of video games, but
on this subject, it's not, you know, it's not ridiculous, though, you know, to say that, because, yeah, I can't even think, you know, in a lot of indie games, maybe there's this level of nuance in something like a dating sim, but that's a very niche thing that a lot of people I don't think would necessarily call a compelling game either, you know? Not like a Mass Effect or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's not even just that. I mean, I also feel like this is probably going to sound gamer-gate-ish of me, but I can't – I mean, no matter what the stance is, I feel like most independent games I play are going to be very, you know, college-level art house, or they're going to be very – hell, I actually saw my friend play one on his Ouya at one point. Really terrible game. Or they're going to be, you know, a bit – driven by a personal agenda, and I don't mean that in the, you know, conspiracy aluminum foil hat wearing. I just mean that, I mean, people sometimes want to get a message out there, a specific thing. I mean, technically, I was even saying with my idea for the game where you play a homosexual male. I mean, there was a bit of an agenda in there, I'll admit, in that idea, but I like the idea of something that's written, because it's more about, let's try and explore our understanding of the world, rather than, this is my understanding of the world and I'm going to use this to deliver my understanding of the world. And I feel like in the indie scene, you're going to get the latter a lot more. Maybe that's closed-minded on my part, or maybe that's a misunderstanding of what I've read about, what I've seen and stuff, or maybe that's just me being a cynic. Maybe that's just me being an asshole. But that's some of what I feel like you'll find, as opposed to an effort to really try and sit down and say, you know what, let's see, how can we use games to understand the world better? And even then, like, as I said, like, the indie scene is also going to be, as we know, limited in budget and therefore limited in scope. I mean, granted, there are a lot of things you can do. Like, on the Gamer with Jobs conference call recently, Julian Murdoch spoke with Julian Murdoch and I found out, okay, Julian Murdoch and Amanda Cosmos. They spoke about Hatsoful Boyfriend, and one of the things that they discussed was being surprised at how involved they became with the game's story and characters. But at that point, it's also because it relies a lot on good writing and a lot of text that you're going to be reading. So it might be, it's still limited in scope and how it delivers. That part is going to be rely on good writing. And even amongst the indie scene, I don't necessarily count on finding that with a lot of things. So that's, I think, part of the issue with some looking to the indie games for some of this. But again, like, even look at some mid level like Catherine on PS3 and Xbox 360, don't think it was released on any other platform. Don't think that was a PC game because it's, you know,
no, it
Japanese
wasn't.
Console. Yeah, Japanese console game. But I mean, a game like Catherine, I actually find that game really fascinating. I find it really interesting. But even that has its limitations because, I mean, it drops you into an interesting scenario of a guy that's kind of, I mean, he's in a bit of a rut. He has no ambition. He's got no real direction. He has a job that allows him to afford living and allows him to go to the bar and hang out with his friends every day. And on one end, he's got a girlfriend that clearly really wants to get married, clearly really wants to move on with, you know, the idea that I'm not getting any younger. I'm supposed to have done this, that, and the other thing by now with my life. And so you have, I mean, that on one spectrum. And then on the other spectrum, you have a woman that represents just doing what feels good, right now. You know, no strings attached, no ball and chain. And the thing is, they're at such extremes that by the end of the game, it's like, kind of want my protagonist Vincent to be single and saying bitches ain't nothing but hoes and tricks. I kind of want him to just go off on his own by the end of that game, because I mean, under other circumstances I might be able to relate to quote unquote good Catherine, the one that wants to get married and everything. And I don't think you're supposed to view one of them as good Catherine, one of them as bad Catherine either. But that's the thing, like, for the way they were acting in the game story, I didn't like either one of them for the most part. Under different circumstances, I might have thought the responsible one would have been great, but as it was, it's like, man, she needs to just lay off and let him be. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, to me, it's like, you know what? They're not a good couple. They're not. They're a terrible couple. They need to split up, not get married. But that's, no, that's one of the good endings, is the two of them get married. And it's like, why would you do that? I don't know.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
You can't make sense of the story.
Yeah.
Is that a game that neither one of you played as well?
I've seen bits of it, but I think I got it for free on PS Plus 1 month or something too, but I've never actually played it. I've just heard a lot of discussion about it.
I think I got it free on PS Plus as well. I looked at the menu and then decided to play something else.
Oh, yeah. I did play a demo for it, and it looked interesting. The whole sort of Qbert puzzle thing didn't really grab me, but the idea of it, and like, I kind of wish I could just do the story bits of it and skip the puzzle part. I think treating it almost more like a visual novel, I think, would have interested me more.
Oh, you plebeians. Yeah. Plebs.
I may sit down and play though. I probably, because it did look cool. I remember at the time going, this is a game that, you know, may not handle everything necessarily in the best way possible, but it looked interesting at least and different.
Now, we're getting close to where we got to wrap up here. So I want to finish the last part of the podcast discussing more linear games with stories in them, and there aren't a lot that I can really think of that do a good job with romance or anything, because honestly, the one that has always stuck in my mind since I was a little kid is Final Fantasy VI has what I would consider one of the best love stories in a video game, purely because of the characters Locke and Celeste. And it's funny because Locke meets Terra under the first protagonist under very similar circumstances. He's got this very protective thing. He's got to be very protective of someone. And at first you might think that there's going to be a romance between Locke and Terra, but no such thing comes to pass. Instead, Locke goes and rescues Celeste, who used to work for the Empire. You know, he promises to protect her as well, but what you later discover is that he's got a bunch of baggage that he's not yet over. he failed to, you know, he made a mistake, and his mistake caused his then girlfriend to get injured, get really hurt, suffered amnesia, and then during an attack by the Empire, she became, you know, she just fell under a coma. And because at all these times, you know, Locke failed to do anything to be able to help her, to protect her. And in Japanese culture, there's still a lot of that whole traditional ideas of masculinity. Like, a man's supposed to be able to protect the woman. He's supposed to be able to provide for her. You know, very traditional ideas of all that stuff. So it's one of those things that to him, it is his personal failure. And even though, you know, it's very clear he has this... He has feelings for Celeste. He cannot, like, nothing between them can happen until he has finally gotten closure and moved on. And that's like one of his big side quests towards the end of the game, is getting that closure. He's finally able to do what he can to try and save her. And even so, like, you know, Locke and Celeste never get together because they each have their own things going on. But that's the thing, like, it feels more nuanced. It feels more intricate. It feels like a romance where, in some ways, it's believable because each of them has so much baggage, and it's because of that baggage that it feels so real, kind of a thing. Which I might be talking in circles right now, but I mean, that's the thing. It's a linear game.
Yeah, from a linear game perspective, like it's. I think it's interesting that, that the creators of video games are much better at portraying a relationship of many different, all along the relationship spectrum. When it is a linear game, like, they're pretty good at actually telling the stories of people in certain games. And so when I was thinking about stuff for this episode, like, I thought of Enslaved, Odyssey to the West.
That's what my to-do
list. That's a good example.
Super popular game.
That's what my to-do list. I gotta play that one.
Like, the relationship between the two main characters and how it grows over the course of the game, I think it's really cool. And they do a really good job with, you know, creating the characters and then having a realistic, quote-unquote realistic in the world that they're in, story between the characters and how they sort of grow closer together over the course of the game.
See, that's one of the funny things. I remember a lot of people talking very positively about Enslaved, and also discussing very positively about the relationship between the protagonists, the male and female protagonists. And then I played
Monkey, and I can't remember
Devil May Cry, and it had to have been a different writer in Devil May Cry. Ninja Theory totally screwed it up there.
Yeah, I wonder if it was that, or if it was just Capcom's influence telling them who, well, you know, the kind of characters they had to make.
No, I'm pretty sure it was actually like the creative director of that game. Like, there's a lot of stuff in that game where it's like, yeah, it had to have been a different creative director.
I think Enslaved is sort of built around that in a lot of ways. Like, it's built around the characters first. Like, the characters are in a world. And there is a story going on, but it's focused on the characters, which I think is what gives it the ability to sort of flesh that out in a cool way. Also, if anybody listening hasn't played Enslaved, you should do that as soon as possible.
Yes, you should. You can get that game for a song in a lot of places, including on the PC now as well. I adored that game. Yep. I bought it brand new, and I don't regret it.
I was gifted it on Steam. Maybe I'll make that my next game to play.
It's very, very cool. And interestingly enough, the game actually had a DLC for it as well that was completely centered around one of the sort of side characters in the main story. And it's interesting as well in that it's sort of about his quest as well. It has kind of a weird romantic element too. I won't really, it's hard to talk about without spoiling it, but it kind of does its own weird approach to an odd romantic story that's actually kind of cool too.
That actually reminds me, though, just discussing this, there is a game that I played last year, at the end of last year, and was one of my top games, Drakengard 3, which it doesn't necessarily do romance. It definitely does relationships, but it does them from a dark, sort of pessimistic angle kind of a thing, because it's really, I don't just want to say interesting, that's a bit of a blanket statement, I don't just want to say, I don't know, it's hard to really describe, because you kind of have to describe the entire setting before you can describe how it does the relationships, but it's very much focused on the sexual nature of the relationships, and kind of, it's like it's more focused on the emotions around a sexual relationship rather than the emotions that, like how the emotions are affected. Like, I don't know, like, it's hard to really word, because it's not about the emotions, it's about how the emotions are affected by sex, in a sense. But that's not even, like, a primary focus of the game or of these characters. It's brought up quite often, but it's a very violent game, it's very bloody, and then you have that element, and it's like, these people are all kinds of despicable. And the sexual elements and how that affects their relationships with each other kind of fuel that. It's a very, very interesting game that I need to play more of. It's just kind of difficult. But no, I mean, that's actually a really interesting game to discuss. Maybe I should discuss it. Maybe I should somehow make it an episode one day. But that is just a fascinating game when it comes to that kind of a thing. And, but that's, again, like, that's like, I'm discussing a Japanese game, and like, I'm wondering, like, how many, I feel like if I went through Japanese games, yeah, there'd be a lot that are, you know, otaku bait crud. But then at the same time, I feel like there's a lot more options still that would have good examples. And maybe this is just my bias showing, but that would have good examples compared to finding a good romance in a Western developed game. Because we have Enslaved, and then you have like the BioWare options. We've already discussed how they're flawed, even if the characters are really good and well developed. But then, like, what else do you really have on the Western end of the spectrum? And the closest I can think of when it comes to just, and that's the thing, like, part of it is just really meaty characters that you can get into, really good, interesting characters. And the closest I can really get to when thinking about it is actually The Last of Us, in two ways, though. I mean, it's not a romance per se. Well, actually, not at all. And if it wasn't, that would be kind of very creepy and illegal. Between Joel and Ellie, it is, like, there is a love there, but it's not romantic. It is definitely a platonic one, familial, friendship, however you want to call it. That's an interesting one to really analyze, but...
And there is kind of an interesting romance in the beginning of that game, too, between him and Tess, that's kind of cut short early, but there's implications made there.
That's what I was going to... And that's the thing, they never get into it, but there are implications.
Yes.
You get the idea that these are two people that are together just to survive, so they might... That's the thing, like, they might have a carnal relationship, they might have all that stuff, but they also, you can clearly tell, they keep each other at a distance as well. They do keep each other at a bit of an arm's length. So you get the feeling, but there's nothing concrete you can really hold on to. But that's the thing, like, you get the feeling that even if they do, then it is purely physical. That, you know, they like each other, but they're also aware that the other one might die at any time. And they've got to be able to move on. So they never get too attached.
Yeah.
And that is actually really interesting and really intricate, kind of a relationship that they don't have to spell out for you. They don't... I'm sorry. I just remembered a particular game I reviewed in the past on Ramble Pack that had a very terrible relationship that tried to spell everything out for you. And it was terrible. I will not name that game for various reasons. But no, can you guys think of anything else? Can you guys think of anything?
I mean, it was funny that you were talking about Last of Us. There is an interesting, did you ever play the DLC for that game?
I have not yet, actually. I really want to.
There is, I won't spoil that for you then, but there is, a more, There's a romance that develops over the course of that DLC that's quite interesting and is kind of its existence comes as kind of a surprise when it's revealed, but it's also kind of interesting in the way that's approached as well. And that's an interesting thing as well. But there's a few examples like that I can come up with where I actually looked at it and went, actually, that's kind of a neat way to go about it. And it is surprising that with the obscene number of games that I've played in my life that I can't reach for many really good examples of when I think romantic subjects have been handled well. And sort of my best example is a game that's almost 15 years old. You'd think the medium at this point would have advanced a little further in that regard, but I don't know how much it has really.
No, because the medium's still working on properly writing characters, writing stories, writing all that stuff.
And I think the improvements will come out of that, but that's the problem, is some of those core things they're still working on. I think they're never going to be able to do the other stuff right until they get that down really well.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. Like, when it comes to The Last of Us, like, it's a very well put together game in regards to its story, and it's very well... It's got good well-written dialogue and stuff like that, but like on the surface, like I won't be the first to just go in there and say, oh yeah, fantastic story and everything. Honestly, it's kind of a very paint by numbers, you know, typical story until the ending. The ending is what I would call it sort of an electronic digital literature kind of a thing, because the ending really reframes the relationship of Joel and Ellie in a way that changes the game, changes the events, and changes your interpretation of it. Because throughout the game, you think one thing's going on, and then the ending happens, and all of a sudden, it's like you see who both of those characters really are for the first time, and it completely changes the game. So the ending is what really helps The Last of Us. But if it weren't for that ending, if it were much more paint-by-numbers or typical of the games industry, then it just would be a game. It would just be any other kind of a story, post-apocalypse.
Yeah.
But I think we are slowly getting to a point where we can have games that are really well-written and kind of understand that kind of thing. How about you, you Wesley? Do you have anything...
Well, my final thoughts on the topic are that the one couple that we have not discussed, the power couple of gaming, the best romance of the last 20 years,
Master Chief and Cortana. Oh, my God! I was trying to cut you off.
Well done.
And, you know, I'm only sort of joking.
You know what, though? There is something to be, like, I'm not the big Halo guy of this group, but there is something to be discussed there. I would agree.
There's something to be discussed there.
it's not overt, but I think there's something there, and it's worth thinking about for at least a solid 10 seconds.
Well, then we've given it its due time. Okay. And remember, this is someone that liked Halo 1 and 2, and 2 is kind of where they really start to hint
at
something. And then 3 happened.
Have you played Halo 4? Have you played Halo 4?
I did, and I played it once. I think I played it once.
Okay, because they sort of took it to another level in Halo 4. So.
Oh, yeah, they did. But that wasn't Bungie. Which is either good or bad. I don't know. But no. That's, yeah. Yeah, good night, everybody. No. No, I think that does give us a good point to just close out. So, I mean, yeah, that's some of our thought. And I think, honestly, you could probably talk about this even more. Like, if we really went through and tried to find good examples of romance games. I imagine you can find some from like adventure games kind of a thing. Like people will bring some stuff like that up, or older games that I never got to play because they were on PC.
Or if we could find somebody really into JRPGs or Japanese visual novels.
No, the visual. Yeah, we didn't get to get into those. And honestly, I would love to see someone take elements of adventure games, take elements of visual novels, and just really combine them into something new and different. Or even just like, because I feel like L.A. Noire could have benefited from the developers having played more Phoenix Wright or something like that. And man, I keep on wanting to discuss Murdered Soul Suspect this episode, but that's going to be next week. Next week, Jerry, you and I.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But that's the thing. Like, I'd love to see some of that stuff like move away from their genres and into some kind of new, possibly higher budget genres. I like my bigger budgets. I'm sorry. I'm an asshole. I like bigger budgets.
Me too.
They allow for more opportunities.
Yeah.
Theoretically, until the publishers get involved. But no, I mean, that's the thing. There's so much we could talk about. Visual novels, there's all kinds of Japanese games I'm sure we could discuss. There's all kinds of, I imagine people are going to have their smaller, or they're going to have their indie games. Like, technically, Braid is an example of a breakup, I believe, or something like that. Like, I don't know. I never played it. There are going to be games, again, like, I didn't get to play To the Moon, but I know Love, that is basically a love story. All these things that other people have played and they'd want to bring up. There's all kinds of stuff that can be brought up in that regard. And you know what? If you would like to, then go ahead. I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/RumblePack64. Look it up and you can comment. I'll have a post with this podcast episode. You can comment on there. Let me know your thoughts. On my blog, you'll be able to comment. Even comment on the iTunes page, you know, where people have reviews. You can comment on an iTunes page, right? You can do that. Either way, I mean, just... Or email, you know, ramblepack64@gmail.com. You know, just send an email, send anything, comment what you think about this kind of stuff. What do you think about the romance and games, you know, or what you'd like to see or something that you think did a very good job of it. Otherwise, I mean, as always, you can find me at www.gamertag.net. You can find me at facebook.com/ramblepack64. You can go to youtube.com and search RamblePack64, or just Google it. Google might even autocorrect you. And, of course, subscribe to me on iTunes or on my blog. You should be able to grab, like, the RSS feed and stuff. Jerry, people can find you at geekbravado.com, and they could also find you by searching for Parallax Abstraction or Retro Flashback on YouTube, I believe.
Indeed, yep. I've been putting more of those out lately. I did a couple of new episodes recently. I did one where I brought back Angry Parallax, basically what I call it. Where I did a coverage of a PC remastering of the first three Double Dragon games, which was not done very well, but. Funny enough, the developer of that trilogy actually contacted me and thanked me for the feedback, despite the fact that I ripped it to shreds. They were really cool about it, actually, and they're like, hey, if you want to get on our PR list, let me know. I was like, you guys are nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And I'm going to be starting – I've got two Retro Flashback Plays series in the pipe. I'm going to be doing – well – I recently did a retro flashback of a kind of interactive movie game from the CD-ROM era called Siberia that I remembered much more fondly than it is. But now I want to see the end of its story, and it only takes like 3 hours to beat, so I'm going to do a plays of it because why the hell not? And I might as well announce it here. I haven't announced it to my channel yet, but I'm going to do as my next one. I'm actually going to go through underappreciated gem Star Wars Republic Commando. Which came out on GOG recently, but it's been on Steam for a while, and I played that on the original Xbox, and I friggin' love that game, and I really want to play it again, and it runs fine on Windows 8, so I'm gonna do it.
Talk about games.
Isn't that part of the Humble Bundle right now?
Yeah, actually, yes, it is. Yeah, at time of recording, anyway, there's a Star Wars Humble Bundle up that you get that if you buy in at like $12, I think.
Talk about games that need, like, you know what? Screw Star Wars Battlefront. I don't give a shit. Give me more Republic Commando.
Oh,
God. Four-player co-op.
Yes. I would pre-order the living crap out of that if they did it. And, yeah, I absolutely love that game. And it kills me that apparently there was supposed to be a sequel for it that ended up getting canceled because LucasArts. But no, so that's going to be after I do Siberia, which I'm probably going to record in one sitting this weekend. That's going to be my next one. And yeah, I'm digging that, especially since you can mod it to make it run at modern resolution. So it should look real nice, too.
All right. And Wesley, as usual, we can find you at historyofthegreatwar.com is your podcast.
That is correct. That is correct. It has nothing to do with video games. I always like to make that clear.
Yeah.
historyofthegreatwar.com, history podcast. It goes weekly. Maybe I'll start a podcast soon that discusses underappreciated romances in video games, like Master Chief of Cortana or Sokka Tavish in his M16.
So that'll be all for from us for now. As I said, next week it's going to be me and Jerry talking Murdered Soul Suspect.
Yes.
It will be spoiler laden, but I hope you look forward to it because I really dug it. Jerry had some issues.
I dug it too, despite its issues. So I think it's going to be an interesting chat about a very interesting game.
So please look forward to that, and I am trying to make sure these can get out weekly if I can. There might be some week breaks, but hopefully it's not going to be like, oh, the last episode was 2 months ago. So already doing better. We got, 3 weeks in a row now? So, all right, I hope you guys enjoy listening. I hope you look forward to more, and shut up, Wesley! All right, good night, everybody.
Take care, guys.